Bloomberg, in its recent opinion about BRICS expansion, noted, "A bigger BRICS marks a failure of U.S. leadership." Bloomberg added, "At the recent summit, governments of the five BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, invited six more to join their group, adding Argentina, Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates won't mark the end of their effort to enlarge the pact," they say. "It's only the first stage of a wider expansion intended to give developing nations more say in global governance. The growing appetite for an alternative to the prevailing international order is important in itself and marks a failure of U.S. leadership." Also, according to RT, Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has said BRICS can bypass the dollar, chipping away at Washington's economic dominance. "As BRICS gains momentum, the U.S. economy becomes weaker because the members of the grouping can circumvent American sanctions and trade in their own currencies." Speaking to her constituents in Georgia, the Republican Congresswoman lashed out at the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden, which she said is turning a blind eye to the rise of BRICS, an economic group which consists of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and accounts for more than a quarter of global GDP. The Republican firebrand claimed that while Washington is doing nonsense, including providing all kinds of support to Ukraine, which is locked in a conflict with Russia, there are other countries in the world, powerful countries, organizing together because they are tired of the United States. In this sense, the BRICS countries are making serious trade agreements where they are saying, "We will buy from you. You will buy from us. We don't care about U.S. sanctions, and we will sell to one another. Buy and sell in our own currency, not the U.S. dollar," she stated. Green said, "This is one of the most devastating things that can happen to all of us." "As BRICS becomes more powerful, the U.S. dollar gets weaker," she said, adding, "And you know what happens to all of us? We are going to go broke." The congresswoman predicted, adding that this dynamic will negatively affect their retirement plans and personal savings of ordinary Americans. Green said, "What is going to happen to our children when the U.S. dollar means nothing anymore? Because Russia and China and India, with its huge population of billions of people, have more buying power in their own currencies than we do? This is a very serious concern." The U.S. Congresswoman's remarks come on the heels of a historic BRICS summit in South Africa, where the group agreed to an unprecedented expansion, admitting six new countries, including Iran, Argentina, Egypt, Ethiopia, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE, which will become full-fledged members in 2024. In a declaration summarizing the summit, BRICS, which has historically positioned itself as an alternative to Western-dominated international institutions, reaffirmed its commitment to inclusiveness while expressing support for the legitimate aspirations of African, Asian, and Latin American countries to play a more prominent role in the global arena. TASS News Agency also reported the IMF and the World Bank are becoming less and less manageable and do not serve the interests of the BRICS members. The expanding membership of the BRICS is signaling a desire to seek an alternative to the prevailing international order after a failure of U.S. economic leadership, Bloomberg said in an editorial article. The U.S. turned away from economic leadership in line with the policy of former President Donald Trump, a course that was then affirmed by incumbent President Joe Biden, the article said. The IMF and World Bank are increasingly rudderless and don't meet the interest of BRICS members, according to the piece. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi noted when they spoke by phone on August 28 that BRICS expansion would undoubtedly help bolster the group's influence in international affairs, the Kremlin said. The BRICS held a summit in Johannesburg from August 22nd to 24th. Summit participants agreed that Argentina, Iran, Ethiopia, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE would join the group on January 1st, 2024. Another international group, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, announced in July that Iran was joining as its ninth member.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, reciting the Holy Quran and its effects in our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's such an honor to be here at your service, dear friends. We are talking about the effects of reciting the Holy Quran in our Islamic lifestyle. So first and foremost, we need to really understand and realize that reciting the Holy Quran in itself is an integral part of living a Islamic lifestyle. I guess there is no Islamic lifestyle if we don't recite the Holy Quran. Now, of course, there are various effects which come about via reciting the Holy Quran. But before we get to those effects, it's important to know that, yes, looking at the pages of the Holy Quran has spiritual effects. Then reciting the Holy Quran has more spiritual effects. Reading the translation of the Holy Quran and understanding what we are reading, that has even more spiritual effects. And of course, thinking over and reflecting over the Holy Quran and the verses of this majestic and glorious book has even more spiritual benefits and spiritual effects. And of course, they're all very positive effects. To be honest, if we are facing some sort of trouble, if in our homes there seems to be some kind of disturbance, or there isn't tranquility, or there isn't peace or comfort inside the home, try to recite the Holy Quran out loud, first and foremost. And if for some reason, you know, you can't find time to recite the Holy Quran on a very regular basis, even though you should be, put on a recitation of the Holy Quran out loud. That recitation of the Holy Quran, because sound waves have a certain effect in the environment, right? And the sound waves of the Holy Quran are waves which are in sync with the metaphysical world. And so in this metaphysical realm, in the spiritual realm, these sound waves have an effect upon the environment. It's really interesting. In one of the traditions, it says that if you have a child who is a little bit unruly, recite the adhan to them, and that will calm them down. And so similarly, we realize and understand that the recitation of the Holy Quran will bring about these peaceful and tranquil and this kind of serenity to our homes if we are finding that there is disturbance within the home. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the effects of reciting the Holy Quran in our Islamic lifestyle. We did talk about how it is necessary for us to recite the Holy Quran and also the other steps that continue as far as the recitation of the Holy Quran. We talked about how one of the effects is that it brings peace of mind, tranquility, and serenity to the home where the Holy Quran is being recited. And we even said that, listen, if you can't recite yourself, put on a recitation of the Holy Quran, and it will bring about peace and tranquility in the house. But of course, you also have to yourselves have this peace and tranquility in order to complete the puzzle. Another one of the beautiful effects of the Holy Quran is that it polishes us, it cleanses our hearts, and it removes the rust which has been collected over our hearts. Of course, this rust that has been collected over our hearts either comes via ignorance or the committing of sins on a constant basis, or the forgetfulness of the hereafter, the forgetfulness of the remembrance of the Almighty Allah, or the forgetfulness of the fact that we're going to die. So all of these things, this ignorance, this ghafla, this kind of negligence and carelessness and just, you know, out of mind, out of sight type thing, these things, they create rust upon a person's heart. And the way to remove that rust is to recite the Holy Quran. And so we really realize the importance and the necessity to recite the Holy Quran, to be in touch with the Holy Quran, to have a relationship with the Holy Quran, to have a connection with the Holy Quran. And of course, this magnificent divine book, it was divinely sent by the Almighty Allah to an individual, the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, who was divinely appointed, who was immaculate, who did not commit sins, who made no error whatsoever in relaying the message of the Almighty Allah. And so we really should benefit from the Holy Quran in our Islamic lifestyle. And if you start, you know, slowly but surely, just a few lines every other day or a few lines every day, you will really begin to see a huge difference when it comes to a pure, beautiful, and exemplary Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
in the limelight.
Gun deaths of children in the United States of America has increased by over 40% between 2018 and 2021. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote in this regard, child gun deaths hit a record high in the United States in 2021, breaking the previous record set just 1 year before, new research finds. A total of 4,752 children in the U.S. died gun-related deaths in 2021, a new study found using Centers for Disease Control and Prevention data. This is an 8.8% increase in the pediatric gun mortality rate for 2020 and a staggering 41.5% increase from 2018. This horrifying trend shows no signs of stopping, experts say. In 2020, guns became the leading cause of death of children in the U.S., surpassing car crashes for the first time in recent recorded history, and far surpassing COVID-19 deaths. The analysis published in the American Academy of Pediatrics last week also found that the disparity in gun deaths among black children compared to other groups remains high. Despite black people making up less than 14% of the population across the U.S., 50% of children killed by guns in 2021 were black, while black children accounted for 67.3% of firearm homicide victims. The researchers also found a correlation between poverty and pediatric gun deaths, with children in states with higher rates of poverty having a higher chance of dying due to firearms. Overall, 64% of the pediatric gun deaths were homicides, 30% were suicides, and 3.5% were categorized as unintentional. 85% of children who died firearm-related deaths were male. Many of the states with the highest rates of child gun deaths were also states with some of the loosest gun laws, according to Every Town for Gun Safety's rankings, like Mississippi, Alabama, and Montana. This is undoubtedly one of our chief public health crises in this country. Chetan Satya, lead author of the study and pediatric trauma surgeon in New York, told NBC News, adding, "The most likely reason that your child will die in this country is at the hands of a firearm. That's not acceptable." Satya added that researchers thought they would see a decline in gun-related deaths from 2020 as pandemic measures eased and children were outside of their homes more. The fact that gun deaths rose, despite that prediction, Satya said, suggests that the violence is now an alarming new baseline. This means that it's possible that data from 2022 will also show another record high number of pediatric gun deaths. An analysis by the Washington Post earlier this year found that the number of school shootings hit a record high in 2022 with 46 shootings at K-12 schools. The research follows findings that a record number of people in the United States of America died due to guns in 2021, with 48,830 deaths, according to a separate analysis of CDC data. The report authors said that the reason for the increase in gun violence, and indeed deaths and violence in general, is the increase in gun purchasing and access in recent years. Despite the rise in gun violence, conservative state lawmakers have been working to loosen gun laws at a rapid pace. In the year after the shooting at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, in May 2022, state lawmakers passed 93 gun-related bills, 56% of which were aimed at expanding access to guns or providing protections for the gun industry. According to Sky News, an emergency room doctor has shared a startling reminder that gunshots are the number one cause of death for children and teenagers in the United States of America. Dr. Sam Gully shared the chest X-ray of a young boy suffering from a condition that is now one cause of death in children and adolescents in the United States. On X, formerly Twitter, asking his followers, "What's the diagnosis?" The picture shows the child's chest with what appears to be foreign objects, including the lungs. Thoughts, prayers, I will give you a hint, it's not the flu, RSV, or COVID, Dr. Gully added. The majority of replies to the picture correctly guessed it showed a gunshot wound. An analysis of U.S. Centers for Disease Control data published recently showed gunshots remained the leading cause of death among children in the United States in 2021. The study published in the American Academy of Pediatrics Journal found 4,752 children and adolescents from newborns to 19-year-olds died from being shot in 2021. Of those, 64% were homicides, almost 30% were suicides, and 3.5% resulted from unintentional injury. Sky News added it was a 41.5% increase in the pediatric firearm death rate from 2018 to 2021. The study's authors wrote the large uptick in pediatric firearm-related deaths in 2020 garnered national attention, with many theorizing the increase to be because of the onset of the coronavirus disease 2019 pandemic, an exacerbation of root causes. Strikingly, although initial pandemic-related fears and anxiety have dampened, firearm mortalities persisted as the leading cause of death in children and adolescents in 2021. At least 1,187 children and teenagers from newborns to 17-year-olds have been killed in shootings so far this year, according to data from the Gun Violence Archive.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. This is IRIB English Radio, and you're listening to Youth Station. I am Bita. And I'm Asma once again.
If we are in our sweet, sweet home.
Yeah.
Once there was this friend of mine that I was really close to. You know, I'm not that kind of person who can really easily get close to someone.
Mm-hmm. And, clearly.
Yeah. And she was really dear to me. And we were going to have a good relationship with each other.
And I think that this story is not going to end well.
Yeah, fortunately. Most of the stories have bad endings or they're open. And unfortunately, we don't have that kind of happy endings here.
And I hate open life. Endings. But they are better than
they're beautiful.
Ugly endings.
Maybe. Not sure about that. So let's talk about my friend here. I don't want to make it as an open end story here. And we were having a good relationship. And once I saw something. We were out and a new person came to our company. She was completely changed. And I was like, what are you changing yourself like that? You know, I'm your friend for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. And you're acting like someone else in front of someone who just came to our company and just talking to us and completely new and a stranger and something like that. I was surprised. And she was just justifying herself. And she was like, okay, I didn't do anything wrong. I wanted to be like that. And if you think I was changed, maybe you didn't know me well. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're tearing the blame into me right now. And you're telling me that this is my problem?
And how easily we just choose our words.
Exactly.
How easily.
And that was the time I just put a full stop to this friendship.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a bit harsh, but I think it was...
Well, I must say that such a thing does not happen in the world of, I don't know, a little bit older young people. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean that sometimes you see such behaviors, but you do not take action. The only thing that happens is that you lose your interest in that person.
Yeah.
I mean, you do not say, okay, this is the full stop. From now on, we are cut.
I know what you mean.
There is no place that I can see you and there is no way that I can hear you. Just I would lose my interest in these sort of people.
This is so sad.
You know, the thing that happens, which is so dangerous, I must say, it's so dangerous because sometimes as friends, we talk to each other. We just go out, we do things together, we go shopping together. But then I do not understand what you have in your mind. So suddenly... You lose your interest in me. I do not know what I have done.
This is a kind of awkward situation, in my opinion.
So awkward.
I mean, you know what? Because it's just you don't know what you did that person lost their interest in you.
This you don't know what
exactly.
Kills you.
I know. And I think here that you don't know what is the problem of that person. I mean, if you have some red lines, red flags for other people's
I usually
behavior,
say it as well. I just say it to there's a friend of mine. Yeah. She gets into misunderstanding so much. And then, honestly speaking, if I was at an age of, I don't know, 11, 12 or 15, I would have done the same thing that you did. Yeah. I would have made a full stop there. But then, unfortunately, we are grown-ups and I cannot do that. So the only thing is that I just ignore. And I did not go for much of interaction. The only thing that happens, she comes towards me. And then every time she comes with a new story, with a new daggering story. As in, she tells me things out of 5 years. After five years, she comes to me and then she tells me, do you remember that day? Okay, I don't even remember yesterday.
Yeah.
Just to make it clear for you, I don't even remember what happened to me yesterday. I just live in today.
Yeah.
And not just today. I just live in the moment. Even if you ask me what happened in the morning, maybe I do not remember.
Okay.
So I have whatever problem you call it, but I'm just like this. So when you ask me about a thing that happened 5 years ago and then you start to allude to it and then you start to judge me by that thing that I am not even aware of what it was, then it make me just feel like so disappointed at you. And another thing which really disappoints me is about the times that someone just changes their behavior with you and you don't know the reason and they don't talk to you. They don't open up. Come on. If you are sad about something, if I did something wrong, I'm a human being.
Let it out. Let us know what's the problem.
I may make some mistakes. I'm a human being and human being is to err, you know?
Yeah.
And there may be some kind of misunderstanding over.
As a human being, I am not an encyclopedia. I do not know everything.
Exactly.
Maybe I sometimes do not even understand something.
Yeah.
So as a person who cares for me, I expect you to tell me things.
Exactly.
If I'm bothering you in any way, you have to tell me. If you expect me to do something, you have to tell me.
And even after telling their problems, you may figure out that it's only a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And it's a pity.
Now that I remembered what happened to me, I just felt so angry so suddenly. So I guess it's better for us to go for a break, for a sip of water, and then cool down and then be back.
So stay tuned.
Welcome back. This is Youth Station. I'm Asma and...
And I am Beta.
Yeah, I am better right now. I feel like better.
Yeah, she's really
simmered down. But still, you know, thinking about the topic, it makes you just so irritated.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Because, you know, it happens a lot. This is something that we are in touch really so much every day, every single moment.
And this story has got two sides.
Yeah.
Once you lose your interest in someone, the other time, the other people lose interest in you.
Yeah.
I mean, they no longer like you. They no longer feel like so close to you. They no longer want you in any community they have. You are just an outlaw, an outcast.
I think both sides are really difficult.
Yeah.
No matter whether you lose interest to someone because you feel kind of maybe, you know, you feel like it's a scene to lose interest to someone. And the other side is other people losing interest in you, which is, again, really difficult.
So difficult.
So difficult.
I mean, imagine you so much love your community, but then suddenly all of them turn their back against you.
And you feel like an outsider.
An outsider.
Yeah. I cannot tell you that I have a lot of experience in that field. I don't.
But it happens.
But
for
it
all
happens
human
for
beings,
everybody.
It happens.
And, you know, sometimes these kind of things that happens in our life that we find out that other people just lost their interest in us will help us, you know,
to think more.
Yeah.
I remember this concept just reminds me of the time when we were children and we moved from one city to another city and then you had to change your school. And then in that new school, you were an outsider and then none of them were like so happy with you coming to their class.
Yeah,
and then what happened with that? You just felt like, okay, I'm not a welcome guest in here.
Yeah.
And it's so sad.
It is, especially when you're younger.
Yeah.
And when you get old, you know, you don't care that much about other people's opinion about
you. Exactly.
So, which is something bad, you know? You are
careless. It's even a good thing, I suppose.
Maybe, but sometimes it bothers other people that you're so carefree about whatever everyone thinks about you. And maybe they envy you that you are this so... You know, just you're living your life.
So easy.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, the thing that I believe in is that we have to have some red flags. We have to have some boundaries here that are so clear, you know, in relation with other people.
Exactly. Now, this is very important. But then also there's another thing that just crossed my mind right now.
Yeah.
What are the reasons for a person to lose the interest of others? I mean, they no longer like you because of number one.
Number one, which I want to tell you, which is so sad, is a huge amount of kindness that you share to other people. When you are way too kind, it sounds kind of suspicious to other people. And they're doubting you. They start doubting you and they're like, come on.
Oh, now, this
you're not
factor
natural.
Is a little bit of philosophical.
It
and
is.
You have to look at it from a different angle to understand what Beta is just saying.
You know.
But I get what you say. Then I would say the first and the most important thing is the change of your attitude, I suppose. You know, yeah. The people around you see that you're no longer the one who cares. You're no longer the one who cares about the feeling of others, about what they say, about what they bring to their tongue. When you just start to look like a carefree person about yeah. everything, then people would lose interest in you.
I think instead of losing interest in someone like that, you have to find a reason why these people change like that. I mean, most
sometimes,
of the times...
honestly, yeah. sometimes it's just because, just the way you said it, just because the people surrounding them were too kind with them.
I know.
So after too much of kindness, they not only pay you back with kindness, but also they stab you in the back. So to think that the other person is starting to be such a rabble-rouser, they become to be a two-faced person, a masked person, then people would lose interest in them. I myself, when I see someone lying, when I understand that someone's lying is proved to me with incidents and evidences around me, then I would lose interest in them. And no matter how much they try, unfortunately, there is no way back. Whether it be for lying, whether it be for bad attitudes, whether it be for selfishness, for anything like this, I suppose.
I get it. You know, you mentioned something that there is no way back for these people too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem of some people is that they allow other people in great relationships to, you know, they allow a lot of way back to, for them, you know. And this is the problem. Sometimes when you give other people a lot of chance to be next to you, they don't want to be next to you anymore.
I just know one thing. Patience has got a limit.
Exactly.
But the limit of different people are just different. So do not test people's patience to the very utmost point, because then there is no way back. So I guess we have to go for a break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yes, this is the last part of today's episode.
Relationships are like some flowers, you know. If you just water these flowers more than what they need, they will become...
rot away.
Yeah, exactly. And if you don't do that again, they will rot away.
They will drool as well.
So there should be a balance here. And you have to always keep that in mind, that there is Allah Almighty there, okay? So if you are doing something and you don't know what is the limit of whatever you are doing, you have to think of what Allah Almighty wants you to be. The saddest thing that can happen to you is that God just lost interest in whatever you're doing.
This is the most important part of today's episode. To be an outlaw in people's world or society is not a problem as long as you're sure that God has not lost interest in you.
Yeah.
And of course, he does not lose his interest.
Unless you have done something
so terrible. Even for those terrible things that you have done, he gives you some hopes in the Holy Book of Quran. I don't remember in which chapter, but I just remember that there's a verse saying that even you, the ones who have done too much of terrible things, there is a way for you to come back for me. Because I'm the one who forgives you all the way. No, he's the one who has created us and he loves us more than anything else. And then he gives us chances to come back and turn it all around. So if you see that other people are not interested in you, if you see that the world is not interested in you, you're not going to feel sad if you are so sure about the bond and connection you have with your Lord.
For sure. Just believe in that you're not alone.
Be strong at the very first point. Then look back, see if you have done anything wrong, and then try to change yourself. If the answer to that was yes, you have done something wrong, then try to compensate. And in the end, the thing that is important is how God is going to look at you.
Exactly.
And so, I guess we all understand that some way in our heart. If we just go deep down, we can understand how he feels towards us.
If it's all the time we had for today's episode, I wish it was it'd be useful for you, dear listeners. Mm-hmm. I bid you farewell.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, has said, "Whoever remembers us to Ahlul Bayt and his or her eyes fills with tears, his or her face will never burn in the fire of hell."
In the limelight.
In Britain, the head of the race equality think tank, Dr. Halima Begum, says the British government has a major credibility issues with denial of institutional racism. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Outgoing head of Britain's leading race equality think tank, the Runnymede Trust, Dr. Halima Begum, says the continued denial of institutional racism has created a credibility issue for the British government. Dr. Halima Begum, who is stepping down as a director of the Runnymede Trust after 3 years, said that soon after the government released its controversial report on race, which claimed to not find evidence for institutional racism, there were several national scandals that showed otherwise. Every time they denied institutional racism, some other event would happen that showed the realities for people of colour living in Britain. If it wasn't the Casey Review, it was the cricket or the experience of the black England footballers at the Euro competition. Every time there is a denial of racism, it surfaces out again. So no, they were not successful, she said. Dr. Halima Begum added, "I would say the more they tried to deny the existence of racism, the more they showed themselves to be not committed to race equality, and in fact, not committed to many people in this country, because the rest of the country could see the disparities. I think it created a bit of a credibility issue for the British government and those that would deny institutional racism. Dr. Halima Begum began her tenure as the head of the Runnymede Trust in 2020, at a time when multiple issues from coronavirus to Black Lives Matter protests were affecting the country. On Black Lives Matter, Dr. Halima Begum says, "It felt like we were living through quite a historic and seismic time. It felt so hopeful, but it also placed a tremendous responsibility on those of us who are a bit older to do something, because we know what happens when young people's demands are not met. There's nothing worse than people hitting the streets and then finding out that actually your action doesn't matter. So I was aware that there was a window of opportunity, a very short time span, to try and deliver those demands into outcomes that could change policy and could change the life opportunities for the next generation." British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered this issue and tells us more. The outgoing head of the Runnymede Trust, the main race equality think tank in Britain, Dr. Halima Begum, says the British government has a major credibility issue with denial of institutional racism. The outgoing head of Britain's leading race equality think tank says the continued denial of institutional racism has created a credibility issue for the British government. Dr. Halima Begum, who's stepping down as the head of the Runnymede Trust after 3 years in the post, said that soon after the government released its controversial report on race, which claimed to not find evidence of institutional racism, there were several national scandals that showcased it. Before the launch of the government's race report, equality groups expressed concerns with the process. But Dr. Halima Begum said Runnymede Trust had engaged fully with the commission. "We were going to make it work. We were going to hold them to account. Now the individuals that they chose perhaps didn't have the best record on race, but you could still work for the process and want better outcomes. Some people might say that's naive, but from an organisational perspective, you have to push it to deliver more." The report, when it finally landed in March of 2021, was widely criticised for playing down the role of structural racism in modern British society. UK bodies that were credited in the report quickly distanced themselves from it, while the United Nations human rights experts described it as an attempt to normalise white supremacy. Dr. Halima Begum said it was startling to see the denial of institutional racism in the United Kingdom. "It was still quite shocking, and the reason why it was shocking to see that denial was because of the twin energy from Black Lives Matter and COVID around the barefaced reality of racism." When the report came out, Dr. Halima Begum was caring for her father, who was being treated for cancer. She added, "Everybody is quick to say, we understand individual acts of racism. That's a bad person, they were racist. But if hundreds of bad people are racist in an institution, it becomes an institutional problem." In response to the Runnymede Trust criticism of the report, more than a dozen Conservative MPs wrote to the Charity Commission demanding an investigation into the organisation. The commission later found the think tank did not breach charity guidance. Dr. Begum said she was receiving death threats at the time and described the attacks on Runnymede Trust as a damning reality. "The idea that a charity organisation set up to speak out against racism wasn't allowed to speak out against racism, that's the tragedy. The political system is so broken that somehow everything feels distorted and you cannot stand for what's right according to your charitable objectives." Still, Dr. Begum feels proud of the work that she was able to achieve at her time at Runnymede Trust. "I'm very proud to have been at an institution that has weathered the storm of multiple fronts of attacks, very proud to be part of an institution that has stood the test of time. And we prevailed.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Reasons behind enemies targeting Islam is the political rules of Islam. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of Islamic Revolution in a meeting with the Supreme Assembly of Commanders and officials of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps on August 17, 2023, in the Imam Khomeini's Hosseiniyeh. Today, the IRGC is the largest counter-terrorism organization in all the world. It is a well-equipped military organization. It is an efficient, independent organization that is capable of doing things that many of the world's greatest armies are incapable of doing. So this was about the growth and expansion of the IRGC. Another point is related to the IRGC's performance. This is also an appealing, multifaceted phenomenon. First of all, one of the most important things that the IRGC has done from day one and is continuing up until today is that it deals with this crisis created by the enemy. This is very important. Let me tell you about a historical event. A short time, about 1 month before the history of revolution, in the early days of January 1979, to be exact, the head of four countries, the United States, England, France, and Germany, conducted a conference, or in their own words, a gathering on a French island called Guadeloupe, which later became known as a Guadeloupe Conference.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The topic of discussion in this conference was the revolution, Iran's revolution, the Islamic Revolution. They gathered together there to talk about what they should do in response to this revolution. They could see that the revolution was about to become victorious. They came to the conclusion that it was impossible to save Pahlavi puppet regime. That was the first conclusion that was drawn in the Guadeloupe Conference. They said that it's impossible. We can't do it. The second outcome was that they comforted themselves by saying that, yes, this revolution will be victorious, but it will face crises and none of the governments that come to power after the revolution will be able to overcome those crises. This is what was stated in the published documents from this conference. They came to this conclusion. This is the amount that was set from this conference. They said that any government that comes to office after revolution will collapse because of the crisis and it will not be able to continue.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
On Friday, trade and base unions held a nationwide strike over what they call a shameful number of deaths at work. On Wednesday, five maintenance workers were hit by a train while repairing tracks on the Milan-Turin line in northern Italy. The day after, two more workplace fatalities occurred, bringing the total number of deaths on the job to over 700 since January. Unions are saying these tragedies could have been avoided.
Yes, these deaths could have been prevented. As safety in the workplace costs money, companies prefer to save on worker safety this way, making bigger profits. Our railway system was in the hands of the state until not long ago. Today, most of it has been contracted to private firms. Private groups only know how to offer services at the cheapest rate. It's like a rat race. If workers complain about their working conditions, they are fired.
On Friday, prosecutors placed under investigation an employee of the National Rail Company, RFI, in relation to the accident in which five maintenance workers were hit and killed by a train. Safety in the workplace is an issue of increasing concern in Italy. According to the European Union's statistical agency Eurostat, 776 fatal accidents on the job were recorded in Italy in 2020. By far the highest number in the bloc.
On top of the deaths at work, we also have a high number of non-fatal accidents and practically no protection for workers on very demanding physically and psychologically jobs. Private companies must be given strict rules when doing workplace safety risk assessments, and their managers have to be severely punished when they fail to observe these rules.
Unions are demanding that the workplace safety issue seriously enter the political debate and that the country's work system finally comply with the EU safety standards. Max Civili, Rome.
On Friday, Amir Abdullahian met with Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah, Parliament Speaker Nabih Berri, and caretaker Foreign Minister Abdullah Abu Habib. Both sides discuss the latest developments as well as challenges facing Lebanon on various levels. The issue of Saudi-Iranian rapprochement seemed to be a significant additive, which experts believe could prove constructive.
Any rapprochement between the countries of the region is in the interest of Lebanon. Saudi-Iranian agreements are a positive step, and they benefit the entire region. And they confront the U.S. ambitions and interests. We know very well that it was the U.S. that opposed this reconciliation, and they always stand against any rapprochement between any two countries in the region.
Iranian experts say Tehran's goal is to have a wider scope of cooperation in the region for the sake of mutual understanding among regional states.
Iran wants to use its bilateral relations with different countries in the region in order to create a multilateral format for cooperation. For example, to work with Saudi Arabia on helping Lebanon or helping Syria or helping Yemeni issue. The vision which is aimed by Iran is strengthening these bilateral and multilateral cooperation against any external interference in the region.
Iran's foreign minister has stressed that Tehran will not hesitate to provide Beirut with any necessary need, but without any interference in Lebanon's internal affairs. Iran's foreign minister has always stressed in all his visits that the election of a president is an internal Lebanese issue. He also suggested that a positive Saudi perspective toward Lebanon could help break the deadlock in the presidential crisis.